Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. If you're anything like me, you want a successful, abundant business, epic energy, a growth mindset, vibrant health, and beautiful relationships. And this podcast sets out to help us achieve all of that together. I've been in the entrepreneurship arena for almost a decade now and have mentored hundreds of other business owners. So I know what goes on behind the scenes and what it takes to succeed. This podcast shares the tips, tricks, learnings, and lessons I lean on in order to blend the different facets of my life as an entrepreneur, author, wife, and mama to two gorgeous little humans. Let's jump in to today's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. As always, it is wonderful to have you joining me. So this week, I've got another mentee case file, which I'm absolutely loving sharing with you as part of this season. This week's mentee is Hannah Statham. So I had our daughter, Lexi, while I was running my first business, which was an agency. So it was an absolute delight to mentor my longtime mentee, Hannah, through getting her content marketing agency, Media Mortar, ready for her to step out for 4 months to have her first baby. Her goal when we worked together last year was to step into her maternity leave and not look back, which she 100% achieved. In 6 months, Hannah onboarded a general manager, prepared her clients and team for her to step out, and gave birth to little Penelope. In this conversation, she breaks down the steps she took to make this a reality, including the state of play of the business before she found out she was pregnant. Hint, she was very in the weeds, as she says. The VIP day we spent together before her pregnancy was announced and the key action points she had from it, the hiring process for a GM and how she chose the person she did. And I think it's really important to note that this episode isn't just for people who are stepping out, planning to step out of their businesses to have a baby. It's for anyone who's looking to pull themselves away from the weeds of their business and also potentially onboard someone like a GM to take on more of the mental and physical load of running the business. So I'm really, really excited for Hannah to step through the process that she used because I think it was awesome. We also talk about how she onboarded her GM, and I loved this process, as I said, including sales incentives for that GM, communicating her maternity leave to her team and clients, how she stayed in touch with the team while she was on leave, and also her re-entry to the business and what her role looks like now. I'm so excited to bring you this chat. I love Hannah's energy. She is such a smart thinker and operator, and she has got so many nuggets for you to apply in your business in this chat. So let's jump in. Hello, my dear.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Lorraine.
I'm so excited to talk to you. I was just saying to you before I hit record, we'll need to be very mindful of talking because you and I could probably talk for 7 hours.
100%. I can talk under cement and I know you can too.
Yes. So. And we've ticked off all the important stuff like solids and breast milk versus solid nappies and all of the baby talk. So yeah, we've got all that sorted so we can get into business now.
Definitely.
So my dear, you know what I just realized as I was coming upstairs because I always record my podcast in Lexi's bedroom because it's the best acoustics. I realized that you're my longest, literally my longest paid mentee because remember I went back into my first business when Lexi was 3.5 months old and I opened 4 spots for mentoring. Mm-hmm. I called it Turbo Mentoring back then. And you're one of those, you were the very first person to say yes. And then I was thinking, isn't that cool? It's full circle because Lexi was that age and Wilder's just ticked over. He's 2 months old today as we're recording this. And we're still working together. It's just really, and you've got your own baby. It's this really cool.
I know. It's sort of thing. Like I'm where, yeah, exactly yeah. Where you were then entering yeah. into the business is where I am now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's super exciting. So as I've mentioned in the intro already, or will when I record it, we're talking about getting your business baby ready and also onboarding a GM. But what I think is really important that even if someone isn't planning on having babies or they've already had their babies, what you're about to share in this episode is so important for anyone who's trying to, I guess, extricate themselves out of the day-to-day of the business, of their businesses. So even, I know we're going to be talking about this in terms of getting baby ready, but this is just getting life ready. If there's something you want to do, whether it's a long holiday or spend more time with your family or just take 6 months off to chill and go to Byron, this is going to be so good what you have to share. Because I think the reason I wanted to interview you on this topic is I just think it's textbook how you've approached this. And in terms of finding out you're pregnant, deciding what your action points were going to be, and then just chatting
briefly as we got on this, you've just made such a roaring success of the whole adventure. So yeah, I'm thrilled that you're making the time to do this. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to share it because I think, as you said, regardless of whether you're having a baby or not, this is something everyone can learn. It is how to get off the tools themselves.
Yes, such a good way of putting it. So can you give a bit of background to you? So you and I, as I mentioned, we've worked together for 4 years now in various different kind of iterations. You've come on retreats. We've spent a lot of time together over the last few years, which I've loved. Can you give a bit of background to you and your business? So who you are, what you do, and where you are?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so my business is called Media Morta, and we are a content marketing agency. So we work in, I guess, an area of marketing that is a little bit, it can seem a little complex sometimes. So it's basically the words, images, and videos and the distribution thereof of them. So we work across lots of different channels in that distribution space. So a lot of the time we work with social media. So that could be organic social media, so your Facebook, your Instagram, YouTube, creating the content that goes out. We do the paid elements of that. So Facebook ads, as an example, YouTube pre-roll, LinkedIn advertising. We also write website copy. So we do the words for that. We do brochures, flyers, collateral, design elements for those sorts of things. So that's what we do in a nutshell.
And the business, you're coming up to 5 years, are you, in the business?
Yeah, 4.5 at the moment. So yeah. You're spot on. I started working with you, Lorraine, at the 4 year mark. So I guess before I set up Media Morta, I was working in-house, and I was in a job that I really was quite unhappy in. And so I sort of, how I started the business was my partner, Chris, he runs his own business, and he's a building designer. And I was helping him with an Instagram strategy and doing some content development for him. And he really sort of was a bit of a pioneer in his Instagram channel and became an influencer. He would hate that word, but he's got, 50,000 followers. He'd die if I called him an influencer. And so a few of his colleagues and friends sort of started asking for my assistance in terms of, how they could also build up their following. And so I started helping a number of builders with their Instagram accounts. And that's how Media Morta was born. And I, in the end, quit my full-time job. I was going to just work from home for the rest of my days. It was just going to be me running these builders' Instagram accounts. Had all these visions of me, going to the gym in the middle of the day, going out for coffees. And then next minute, I was registered for GST. I had a full-time staff member. I had this business that had absolutely, blossomed. I'd billed, my former salary several times over by the time I got to sit down with Lorraine. And I remember sitting with you in Sydney going, Lorraine, I think I have a business, not a hobby. And yes. I don't know what I'm doing. And that's where we sort of started. And then from there, I think I've bought every iteration of your service.
I think you have too. Thank you.
Like one-on-one turbo mentoring. I've been in one of your masterminds. Yes. I've been on a retreat, and I've done quarterly mentoring, and now I've done a VIP day, which we can talk about.
Fun. We'll talk about that. Yeah. Cause that was pivotal, I think, for you. Yeah.
Yes. So I think that's sort of where we kind of started, and then fast forward 4.5 years, and I have a business, a well and truly a business. It is not a hobby.
No.
I've got an office in Brisbane, an office in Melbourne. I've got 6 full-time staff, and it's really, and then a panel of subcontractors as well that we support as well. So it's really absolutely flourished over the last 4.5 years. Probably the biggest roadblock that we've had, and it would have affected so many of your listeners as well, was COVID. So I know anyone who's listened to your podcast, you frequently reference my business, which is...
I've talked about you in a veiled way, haven't I? Do you want to touch on the impact? Because I think this episode will be dropping. Chances are Sydney will still be in lockdown when this episode is dropping. And so I think it just gives people hope when they hear your story. Can you just share how critically injured your business was last year in the first round of COVID?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think it's a really good preface for my pregnancy story.
Yes,
because I fell pregnant after this happened. So I remember, just to set the scene for everyone, I was down in Sydney doing a one-on-one session with Lorraine. Yeah. It was the 11th of March.
We had big plans, Anna.
We had big plans. I sat there like, what an idiot, with the with my hands behind my head, saying, oh, Lorraine, there's never been a better time to be in tourism marketing. Because we were just getting all of these bushfire, the bushfires had just roared through. There was bushfire grant money, left, right, and center. We were setting up all these campaigns. I said, huh. And one of our clients is Brisbane Airport. They were our biggest client at the time. And I said, huh, Lorraine, oh, you know, we were talking about this COVID thing. At this time, it was just in China. And I said, oh, Lorraine, the airport will never fall, quote, end quote, how wrong I was.
Yes.
2 days later, 13th of March, I just took phone call after phone call after phone call with each and every one of our clients who had to wind up our contract effective immediately. So in the space of 2 days, we lost everyone. Everyone by one or two clients who weren't in tourism.
No, I think that was the only time you've ever asked me for an SOS. Like, I need to talk to you now. And yeah, I could hear it in your voice. Like, you were just off the back of those 2 days. It was, pretty heavy, you poor thing.
Yeah, it was very heavy. I felt, I remember sitting in my office, and I didn't know, and at the time no one knew what was going on, and I felt like I was on a sinking ship. Mm. And I was going to be the captain at that steering wheel who would go down with the ship. And then I had all of these thoughts at the time as, well, who am I without Media Mortar, because I have put so much of myself and my energy into it, and work had become not just my job, it was my hobby, it was my life, it was, you know, I obtained so much value from my work, as do so many people. And that's something that I think across this whole pandemic, you know, has been one of the things that, you know, I find quite hurtful as a business owner, is when, you know, people's work is perhaps described as non-essential, or people, you know, things are bandied around like, oh, it's just a job. You know, if when people say that sort of thing to me, it's really hurtful, because it's more than just a job for me. This is my, you know, my business is who I am. So much of my identity is caught up in it. So it was really, really difficult at that time. What we didn't know what we know now with the pandemic. We didn't know about the government assistance. JobKeeper was still, you know, it was just a sort of a twinkle in the eye. You know, we didn't know what any of the assistance was coming. So we had to do redundancies. I had to step down my team. We had to do lots of things. We had to diversify, which was the biggest piece of the puzzle, and how we got through it is, you know, we didn't need to pivot what we did, because our content marketing skills are transferable, but what we needed to do was diversify our industries. And that's what I really worked with you, Lorraine, on was how we were going to become known for doing content marketing outside of tourism, and how we were going to drive those sales when in the middle of a pandemic, when everyone just locked up their marketing budgets, big companies included. You know?
Yeah. And I think we just need to pause and just recognize the incredible feat that you and the team achieved. I mean, 85% of your revenue coming from tourism marketing, to turn it around. I mean, that's, I think my language to you was that this, I feel like it was the making of you as an entrepreneur going through that experience, because I feel like you did have it relatively cruisy till then.
Yeah.
Like, you had team things, you know, clients kicking up a fuss about things, whatever it might be, and obviously your own energy management and all that kind of thing. But I feel like that, I mean, it was a baptism of fire for sure. But I mean, I just feel like it made you so much stronger of an entrepreneur than navigating that, and your team stronger as well, I think.
Absolutely. And I think I had been very lucky. I hadn't had to have too many hard conversations since running the business. And I just grew up overnight in the middle of the pandemic.
Describing it. Yeah.
Because I had to step up, and I had to lead by example. And, you know, we worked, myself and the team, we worked like our lives depended on it, because quite frankly, they did. We weren't going to have jobs if we didn't all get in the trenches and start with the sales and just pull together. And that's what we did. And I took the same hit, I took a bigger hit in terms of, you know, I didn't pay myself for any of that salary, because we need to remember that, you know, JobKeeper was fantastic when it came through, but we didn't see that money for three or 4 months that I was still paying the team out of our business savings account.
Can I just touch on that, my dear? Is that, because I feel like there's something that you've done, and we need to get back on topic in a second, but I just, I want to jump on this point with you. I feel like something that you have done really well from day one, from your first hire, was investing in the culture of the team and investing in the team. Like, you've really cared for them and focused on building what it means to work at Media Mortar, like brand Media Mortar almost. And I feel like that's when you see the, all those, I almost see it like a bank account. Yeah, you put so many deposits into the bank account over the years. And I feel like you were able to draw out of that bank account last year with the team because you had put so much into it. Mm-hmm. And the only other person that I've seen do that as much during the whole COVID thing is Wade. So they've invested so heavily in their, I mean, their culture is like a freaking cult. And they, same, it actually made their team stronger. And your two businesses, I think, are the most stellar examples of that last year, because lesser businesses, businesses who hadn't focused as much on their culture, they didn't make it, or they didn't come through in the way that yours has. So headlines, you turn the business around, massively diversified your client base out away from tourism marketing. Yeah. And then when did you find out you were pregnant then?
So I found out I was pregnant towards the end of May. And I'm pretty sure, hilariously, you were pretty much the second person to know.
I think so. I think you told me like 8 weeks, I think.
I did. I told you very early. So I
thank you.
I told Chris, and then I was like, right, action stations. Lorraine needs to know about this because we need to put a plan in place. And I was pretty convinced I needed the whole 9 months to get this, to mobilize this plan. And I'd been quite fortunate in that, because we were so devastated by COVID, we'd won a Queensland government grant to be able to work.
Yes, of course.
A business coach to be able to diversify and map out a road ahead for the business. So I was able to use some of that money to partner with you, and that's sort of how the VIP day was born, which was essentially we just knuckled down for, you know, 6 hours on what was Operation Maternity Leave going to look like for Media Mortar.
And importantly, a poke bowl break in the middle to that amazing.
Exactly.
What's it called, in case anyone's in Brisbane?
A cheeky pokey.
Oh my God, so good.
Lorraine and I are obsessed. It's our go-to meal when she's in town.
Have to go there. So at that point, so I think you and I met, I don't think the team knew yet. I think you're only like 11 weeks at that point.
Yeah, I think it was, 10 or 11 weeks. The team definitely didn't know. And the team were quite surprised when I did tell them. Because I think as a bit of a backdrop to all of this, I was one of those the girls call me a really obnoxious pregnant person who didn't suffer any symptoms, and if anything, was like a more heightened version of myself.
Yeah, and so much energy, holy God.
Outrageous energy. I used to refer to it like I had two brains, and I ran, like I've got a really good memory to begin with, and I just reached like, it was like a fifth dimension. Like I felt like at times like I could see sounds. I was so sharp during pregnancy. So when I told the team I was pregnant, they were just like, what? How? Like, because, you know, the stories you only ever hear, or the narratives you only ever hear of pregnant people, and is baby brain and lethargic and
vomiting in the bin under your desk.
Exactly. Yeah. And I had none of these things. In fact, the girls just thought I was on some sort of weird health kick, you know. Very strange.
So can we just take just checking in, as you mentioned the team there. So at the point that you found out you were pregnant, how involved were you in the day-to-day of the business? Give us an idea of team size, client, like what was your, how on the tools were you, to use your language?
Okay, I was all over the tools. I was the tool. Yes. I was the tool belt. I was everything. I was Bunnings warehouse, so to speak. You know, I was so infiltrated across every single thing in the business. Yes. So I worked a lot of hours. I would do, you know, by choice, sort of like 11 or 12 hour days. So in terms of when I say I was on the tools, what I mean is I was across every function of the business. So that was marketing, you know, doing our social media posts as an example. I was doing sales. I was going to the new client meetings, the networking events, that kind of thing. I was in delivery. I was working on our highest profile clients or our most strategic work. I was the point of contact for all of those things. I also was the single line of review on every piece of content that went out of our business that my other colleagues were doing, or my team were doing. So I sat across that. finance. You know, we have an accountant and a bookkeeper, but, you know, anyone who's running a small business knows you've got your fingers in that pie as well. You've got to, you know, check money in, money out all the time. Mm-hmm. And then operations, delivery, any HR functions, all of that I was heavily involved with. So one of the things that was quite, I guess, overwhelming right at the beginning was how was I going to step away from the business when I alone did so much and I was the only person who knew how to do so much. So while I had a great team, they were very competent at their work. I had no concerns whatsoever about the quality of work that was going to be coming out while I was away. It was all of that other stuff that I did that literally no one else knew how to do that was quite overwhelming.
And also sitting across, you touched every part of the business. It's not like it was a matter of going, okay, well, I'll just hire someone to oversee operations. Like you literally touch everything in the business. So that's makes it so much more complicated to resource that, because how do you find someone who can touch everything like you were touching it? So exactly. So you were really, really involved. Summary.
Yeah. I was highly across involved. Everything. And heavily involved, and as much as you know you can delegate tasks out of your business, and I would say I'm quite a good delegator, there are some things, just as the business owner, you just there's no one else that it can go to. So it was it became quite the exercise of, well, what was this role that had to replace me, and what things would I need to retain, what things I could give up, and what things just weren't going to happen essentially while I wasn't there.
And I think also, and that's, this is what we talked about, if we fast track forward to the VIP day, so I was in Brisbane with you for the day, and I think, and we, let me know what you thought of that day, but I know for me the biggest outtake was that my biggest thing that I wanted to impress on you, having been through that whole experience, having an agency model, going, having a baby, coming back in, was that this is an opportunity for you to permanently get off the tools. And not as if you're never going to touch, you know, lift your finger again in your business. But it was a chance. You talked about what would you want, what could you hand over? It's more, what do you want to hand over? And what's the role, what's the future role that we wanted to craft for you that would have you running back into the business after having a baby going, oh my God, I just get to do what's in my superpowers every day. So 100%. I think that's the important thing. It's not necessarily just a short term, okay, well, let's get off the tools, just enough time to go and birth the baby, get them onto solids and get back into my business. It's about, okay, well, how do we actually see this as an opportunity for you to permanently change up your role and create opportunities for other people to step up in the business as well. So how did you find that VIP day? What was your biggest takeout from that?
The VIP day was brilliant in terms of setting things up. So one of the things that I was most worried about with having the baby is, you know, was all to do with the business. That was probably my only concern for the whole 9 months, was what was going to happen to my business baby and making sure that things were still ticking along. So I know one of the things that, or the biggest thing I got out of that day, was the process and the plan that had to go in place to replace myself, which was hiring a general manager.
Yeah, that was my biggest takeout as well, for sure.
Yeah, it was what we focused on. And so I guess there was a few arms to that. One was, well, what was this person going to do? Mm-hmm. How are we going to financially afford that person? Yeah. It was a big one.
Yeah.
And thirdly, how are we going to find that person? So the first thing that we really had to do was work out, well, firstly, like, how are we even going to advertise this role when, you know, as I just mentioned, I was doing, you know, all sorts of random tasks. Like, what does that job description, like, what does that read? How do you make that sound enticing? You know, you can't put out, like, seeking, you know, workaholic to touch every element of this business. You know, that's, we had to craft out this role. And I guess in doing that, I remember you always start your mentoring sessions with one question, which is, what does success look like? And I remember saying to you, Lorraine, I said, I want to sail off into my maternity leave sunset without looking in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
That's where we got to. And I really felt when I left the business in February to have Penn, that's exactly what I did. Is I was only looking forward, and every single thing that we put in place was a forever change, because the biggest way for me to be able to grow the business, which was it aligned with my, you know, 5-year goals that we've been working on for years, or 10-year goals, has always been, the only way that we can grow is if I stop touching everything, because I was bottlenecking quite a few things by insisting on being across them instead of letting people who you pay to do a job to do their job independently. Mm-hmm. So I could be doing the best use of my time. But, you know, I was getting a little bit bogged down in the weeds of tasks that, you know, I shouldn't have been involved with. And by, I guess, elevating myself out of the business or onto the best use of my time and employing more people, you know, which does have a cost, I've been able to actually drive a lot more business, or the business has been able to grow a lot more successfully because it's a much more sustainable structure yeah. to be able to do that.
Yeah. And to a certain extent, it's exponential, because if you keep doing that, I was just talking to another mentee about this morning. If you keep making yourself redundant and bringing awesome people in, I mean, your business is never going to go backwards. If you're, as the business owner, you're spending your time in your superpowers or your zone of genius, is another way of putting it. And just to give an example of how in the weeds you are, I mean, you would, for example, check copy for the team. So they would write copy. You were writing copy. I know there was one particular client. I won't name the client, but you were writing the content yourself. You weren't even handing that over to a team. Like, you were really in the weeds.
Exactly. I was pumping one of my clients' Twitter decks for them. You know, why I wasn't handing over 140 characters to someone in my team is just, you know, beyond me. But I really, you know, quite enjoyed it. But that's not a good use of my time. So I guess one of the best things we did in that VIP day was, well, what's the stuff that drives the most business for us, or what's the best use of my time? Mm-hmm. And we really honed in. I think we said, well, let's just break it down. If you only did three things, what are those three things? And once we nailed that, it was like, well, why am I doing all this other stuff? This is crazy.
This is the superfluous stuff almost. Do you remember what those three things were? I don't remember off the top of my head. I could probably guesstimate them.
One was speaking. Yeah. Which was a little bit of a challenge with COVID, but speaking is definitely the biggest driver of sales in my business. One was strategic work. So I'm always banging on, like, if I get a seat at the strategy table, we actually get a lot more work out of it, because you set the pace, you tell people what you need, they've bought in, and then you can sort of on-sell a lot more things. Opposed to just receiving a brief, executing the elements, and then, you know, client goes on their merry way, and so do we. And I can't remember what the third thing was off the top of my head.
I mean, if I was to guess, I would say it would be building the culture.
I was going to say,
and culture, also, I mean, sales. I mean, you can talk about speaking, we can talk about strategic work, but there's also just converting that into money, which is something you've got an epic superpower of. You're excellent at sales for your own business.
Yes, I definitely think it was sales, because at the time, I was the primary sale driver, and I had another team member who was based in Melbourne who works in a sales capacity, but that point, Melbourne was in its, you know, 200-day lockdown, and she couldn't really be out hitting. She'd moved down in October. You know, we did some sales drives, and we won a couple of clients just before Christmas. Then COVID hit, and it really wasn't at sort of that March to May, June period of 2020. It wasn't really the right time to be like, hi, we're new to Melbourne. Would you like to spend your money with us? I was a little bit nervous. I knew that, you know, we would get through it, and she was definitely still doing sales, but it was a much harder sale for her to do, opposed to me, who could move quite freely around Brisbane, still attending events and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. So you decided you needed a GM.
Yes.
And you found an absolute rock star in Belle. So can you step people listening through, how did you find the rock star?
Okay, so we first... You and I worked on a job description, and what that was. So we pretty much we did a sort of like a time task audit of everything that I did in the business, and then allocated it to what I would want to retain when I came back from maternity leave.
Yeah, which would marry back to the three things that were your superpowers.
Exactly. What things I would delegate to Belle, or what things would be Belle's job. What things could be delegated to the team, and what things we just stopped doing. And we actually wound up a number of clients that just did not meet our strategic goals. So, you know, we sort of ran everything through that sort of test of the story of, you know, the British rowing team, and their sort of method was like, does it make the boat go faster? You know,
yeah, I love that.
Yes, it was, we were just like, every single client is like, is this a client that makes the boat go faster? If no, get them off the ship, like pass them to someone else, hook them up with someone who's better suited to them, so that we had just a really crystal clear price point, a crystal clear service offering. And we're much stronger in our own abilities once we're all working at that certain level. So in coming up with Belle's job description, one of the things that I guess her role that really needed to stick with her for the time that I was away, one was sales, because I was terrified about if I was driving most of the sales, I couldn't really leave, you know, Rochelle in Melbourne to drive all the sales for the business while she was locked up on her own and have the weight of that world on her shoulders. Yeah. So Belle really needed to be able to drive sales. So had to have a new biz element.
Can I just add part of my experience? So I onboarded a business partner in my first business, as you know, and the appearance was that she would be great at sales and was kind of my wing woman in, like, I had a massive sales push before Lexi was born to really get some big clients in the door. But the other thing as well to point out is it's not necessarily about your team supporting you selling while you're off having your baby, but it's also coming back in and knowing that you don't have to roll up your sleeves and get flung straight into hardcore sales, because that's what happened to me. I went back in and there were no big deals that be converted in the 4 months that I was away, 4.5 months. Mm-hmm. No, it was 4.5 months I was away from the business. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that wasn't a fun re-entry back post maternity leave to going, shit, you know, pipeline's looking pretty empty, need to sell. So I think there's one element of it is that you want someone who can come in and sell while you're doing the baby thing. But also you're looking after your future Hannah that you don't, you know, you're not going to have to come back in and go, okay, well, maybe no one's going to sell for a few months. I'll just come back in and sell when I get back in. Like when you're adjusting, particularly for you, because it was your first time going back in after having a baby and the blend, as I call it, rather than the juggle. And it's a lot. The last thing you want to be doing is having the pipeline breathing down your neck that you need to fill pretty quickly. So I think that's just something else I wanted to touch on based on my experience that didn't work out so well for me. In that,
and
that
I think,
particular sense.
I think as well, one of the things when it comes to sales is, you know, the seeds you plant today, you're not harvesting them tomorrow. Mm. And so what I had to do, and this was quite hard, is I had to hand my sales pipeline to Belle. And I did that. And I guess maybe just for the audience, just that as a timeline, Belle started with us in December and I had Penny in February. So I had to, I handed my sales pipeline to Belle in December, so that she was basically the contact from 2021. The day we came back in January, I was present in the office, but I was off the tool. So everything was going to Belle, and I was coaching her through how I would handle that. So I had handed her the pipeline.
Can I just pause you for one sec? Because we're jumping into how you onboarded her, which was brilliant how you did it. Just how you found her. So we identified sales was definitely something she would need to do.
So I then did up a job description and I sent it to everyone I knew, everyone who was a marketing manager of a big organization, that a client. I sent it to a couple of contacts on LinkedIn. Hey, I'm recruiting. I'm pregnant. Who do you know who would be perfect for this role? And as it so happened, I had met Belle a couple of years ago. She was running her own business. She'd been referred to me by one of my clients who was a marketing manager. It was almost like a little catch up that we had. Belle was setting up, she'd just come back from London, was setting up her business and wanted to just have a sort of a pick your brain kind of conversation about how you go about setting up your own business and any advice I had. So we had a great coffee a couple of years ago. And Belle dropped into my inbox at about the 8 or 9 week pregnant mark just to say, hi, Hannah, you might not remember me. I had a coffee with you a couple of years ago, about setting up a business and, you know, fast forward, you know, 2 years, I had a baby, or fast forward a year, I fell pregnant. I'd set up my business and I wasn't really able to sort of continue it because I went on to mat leave, and I was just wondering if I could catch up with you again. And, you know, I'm in the market for work. And it was just one of those sort of the right place at the right time sort of conversations. And so in the end, a few of my clients had recommended people, and so I interviewed three people, and also Belle, because she had come into my life sort of at the right time, and we really, really gelled. She had all of the skills that I was looking for, but most importantly, and I guess this is to the sales point, Belle has one of the best black books of contacts I've ever encountered. and not in an arrogant, like, name dropping kind of way. She's not like that, but I could just tell that she was really well connected.
Yes, good.
And just even in from that first meeting, and I'd told her about our COVID story and wanting to diversify before we'd even gotten to talking about this GM role, Belle had sent me through some connections. She had done a couple of email hookups, and I was like, wow, this girl knows a few people who we could really, really benefit from. So then once I told the girls, I got back in touch with Belle and was like, hey, just letting you know, when you came in and we had that coffee catch up, I didn't mention it to you because I hadn't told the team yet, but I'm actually pregnant and I'm looking for a GM. I don't suppose you'd be interested. She wrote straight back and was like, actually, I would love to catch up. And we had a really slow burn with doing this, which is very the opposite of me. I'm the sort of person who hires, you know, I'm like, love this person, get them in, let's do it really fast. And so this was quite the opposite. We moved quite slowly. We had a lot of coffee catch-ups discussing what it would look like, what she'd need, what do I need. And we just really aligned on so many things. And
I think the benefit you had from that, sorry to interrupt you, that you did get cracking pretty early on, like very, very early on. So you had time. It wasn't like you were going, shit, this baby's coming in 2 months and I haven't got a plan in place. There wasn't much reactivity. Does that make sense? You were very, very proactive and you knew you had that time. And we had decided, you and I, back when we had that VIP day, that you would like to have like quite a slow onboarding, like a 2 to 3 months onboarding so that this person could really be fully in your seat essentially before you stepped off and had a baby. So I think that's a credit to you that you are so proactive and you had that time. You didn't have a ticking clock almost counting down.
Because I remember we'd worked backwards. If I was having, Penny was due the 16th of Feb.
Yeah. Lorraine insisted you took 2 weeks before.
2 weeks off. I was going to work right till the 11th hour.
You argued that with me. I was like, take the 2 weeks off. You won't get this time again.
I really did fight that. And in fact,
you did.
I left work at 38 weeks pregnant and I went to work 4 days that week just to pop in and see the team until they frog marched me out.
Good. Thank you, team.
Are you going to leave? Then, of course, Penn was late. And so in the end, I was just doing little bits and bobs from home. And the team definitely knew when I'd gotten into labor because it was the only day they didn't hear from me. But I was just, I found that. I was also, I really struggled with the waiting for Penny. I'm not a patient person. So it was good to have that little distraction. But because she was due in Feb, it was great to, you'd sort of told me like, well, babies can come early. So we had to have that plan in place from January.
Except our babies, but yes, some people's babies come early. Yeah. Not you and I.
Turns out the more impatient you are, the more chance you're going to have a baby that arrives late. I think it correlates. So then it was like, okay, well, if Penn came a month early, well, that's, you know, the start of January, everyone takes off over Christmas in our industry and comes back the second week of January. So it's like, well, really, this person has to be in place at least by December. So they've got 4 weeks with me, which means, you know, if it takes 4 weeks to interview, you know, that brings us back to November, 4 weeks to get, you know, your job ad and leave it out in market to get enough applicants. You know, by the time we had that conversation in May, we were really sort of, we only had a couple of months to get all of that planning in place. While it did seem like a long lead and it was a lot longer than other people do, you do need time on your side to get the right person.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, tell me if I'm right, I feel like all those coffee catch-ups that you were having with Belle, a lot of that was about determining if your values were aligned. Yes. So, of course, it's about roles and responsibilities and what she could do and what's in it for her and what's in it for you and so on. But I think so much of those early days chats with someone who's going to be such a key hire in your business, it's about the values alignment.
Yes.
And I feel like you both, I mean, I think you on an intuitive sense knew that from day one, from your first chat with her. But when it comes to handing over your business baby to someone, I mean, you want to make sure your values are very, very aligned in that sense.
And
We joke about it now because Belle and I only, I think, have four things we disagree on that we've determined. One is Aperol spritzers.
I knew it would be food or drink related.
Yes. One is dreadlocks. I can't stand them. She thinks they're fine. The other one is board games. I won't play a board game. She just can't get enough of them. And the third one is Negroni. So it's like they're nothing to do with what we do. Like they're the only things we disagree. I'm like, I'll let you have your board games and your dreadlocks and no Negronis. So long as we're aligned on work and culture and hard work and fairness. And that was the really big thing, like for me with culture and how our business was going to grow was from a position of fairness, fairness to the team. You know, what we do for one person is what you do for everybody. You know, I've worked in businesses where there's clear favorites and things like that. And it can be quite hard to stomach. So that was really, really important that the person who was leading fairly.
Yeah. So good. So you hired Belle, obviously, because we're talking about her now. I'm sure her ears are burning sitting in the office right now. So, and can you talk about how, two things, how you actually structured her onboarding? Because I think you're really smart about that because your GM is likely to be your most highly paid employee. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know with most business owners, they're paying their GM in the early days of their business, they're paying their GM more than they're paying themselves. Yeah. So can you talk to that? Yeah, talk to that first, how you did that, because I thought that was really smart how you managed it.
Yeah, so I guess from a financial point of view, anyone who's hiring a senior person in their business, you're coming up with a salary going, oh my God, how are we going to afford this? Because yes, it is the most highly paid person in the business because they have the most important job. And while, you know, as the business owner, you know, your salary also fluctuates when the business is going well. You know, you can go up if the business is going bad, like it did for me in COVID, as I mentioned. You know, you take the pay cut with the business, whereas your salaried staff, you can't do that. So one of the things we did in coming up with the salary was to attach it to a sales target, and that made it a lot more palatable to work out what she was going to be paid, because if she was going to be bringing in this amount of work, well, that's reasonable that she could be paid where we ended up. So that's sort of how we worked out the salary. And she agreed to those sales targets, which got broken down. So she's got an annual target, which gets broken down into quarterly things. But in achieving those quarterly things, I had to hand over a lot of stuff, which was important as the business owner to do. You know, she took over our Hello inbox, which is, you know, the communal website inquiry one, because you know, she had to have the highest sales targets of the team, so she has to be in control of that. And also, that's a terrible place for the business owner to be hanging out, is that website inquiry inbox. You know, that's a great use. You know, that was one of the things that was like, why am I responding to the, you know, some of these inquiries? That anyone could be doing that.
But annoyingly, some of those inquiries do turn into sales, so it's not necessarily something you want to give to the intern either. So it's
exactly. Yeah, it needed to be someone who knew what they were doing and who could vet those inquiries. But, you know, we get a lot of sort of like, you know, very vague, like, how much for social media request? And you're like, well, I don't know. Like, what do you do? How many posts do you want? Do you want reels? I don't know. So that was great to hand that over to her. So in terms of onboarding.
Sorry, my love, Belle, can we just stop one sec? Because the other thing that you did, which was really smart, was that you didn't have Belle coming in. So in the end, she was 3 days a week, wasn't she? But you just started with 1 day a week so she could start to get her head around. I thought that was really good as well, because it almost staged, the investment wasn't 3 days a week straight away. You phased it in slowly. Was that right? So, it was a 1 day a week?
Yep. So Belle started with me as part of her starting off with us. She was 1 day a week from October.
Yes. That early.
She'd
cool.
been on mat leave herself. So that was great. And she was in the daycare wait list game as well. So that worked perfectly for her. So she was in with us 1 day a week. So what I did, and she did 6 weeks of 1 day a week, is I did up a table, which I sent to her, of what we were going to focus for these 6 days. It was a 6 week plan. So on week one, and I took myself offline for those 6 days, and we sat together in the boardroom. And on day one, all we did was talk about the team and who was in the team, what their skills were, what their strengths and weaknesses were, every single thing to do with the team. She had one-on-ones with the team and got to know them. Week two was a deep dive on all of the clients, and we did that. And then we met three of the strategic, of the clients that I had that she would be taking over. So they felt the love straight away.
Love.
The third one was subcontractors, and we met all of our subs and took Belle on a bit of a roadshow to meet them.
Then we did sales, was a massive one, and we whiteboarded out how all of the work comes into the business, how we were going to do it. Then I think the fifth week was systems. We went through Asana, TimeCamp, all of the tools that we use. And the sixth week was sort of bringing it all together. So Belle, and I'd sort of said to her, look, these 6 days or 6 weeks, all they are is your listening. I'm just going to, you just absorb. And on that sixth week, I want you to come back having like absorbed it all with your questions, any concerns, anything we need to tweak. And that was, I think, a really structured approach. And she had written to me in this, when we were still sort of negotiating on onboarding her, she had said, this is the most organized I've ever felt coming into a role. Gave her an impression that I was incredibly organized. And I think that really helped. So that basically that took us to December, and at December she started 3 days a week with me, and that's when she was on.
Yeah. And it was like the reins swapped over to her from December.
Correct.
Yeah.
From December, so that we had onboarded essentially, because Penny was late, I had 2 full months with Belle. So when I came back in January, no one knew I was still around, really, except the internal team, obviously. So everything was going to Belle, and I was phasing off things. So I pretty much said my goodbyes at Christmas.
Yeah.
Which was a great sort of time to have. Belle was leading everything at that point, and then I was able to sort of slip away from the 1st of Feb at your insistence
on my mat leave.
I love that you sneak back in though. So
and as
with
it happened, I was going to say, as it so happened, we came back firing in January, and I actually moved Belle from 3 days to 4 days from January, which wasn't part of the plan. And so she has been doing 4 days ever since.
Got it. Amazing. So am I right in saying that she had your desk from January? Is that right, or from December?
That's right.
Because remember we talked about the physical importance of you moving, physically shifting and being in a different place for the team.
She had my physical desk from January.
Got it. And you moved into the intern spot, didn't you?
Yes, yeah.
In that cubby hole?
Yeah, into the intern spot, into the cubby hole. So I almost like inverted myself in the business for that last month, where I had been the top of the pyramid, and I flipped myself onto the bottom.
Yes.
Only doing tasks that no one relied on me for, per se. Like if I couldn't, just in case I went early with the baby, it wasn't affecting anyone else's workflow
it's almost cherry on top work, I like to think of it as.
Exactly. I was doing that sort of stuff, and everything was going through Belle, all the reviews were going through Belle, and I was teaching her how I would be reviewing work and things like that. Any quotes that came through, we would cross quote together. So I was just teaching Belle in the background as the things sort of came through, which was, I think, a great way of doing it, so that everyone was really cut across. You know, it was a perfect timing with Christmas. You know, it was New Year, new media mortar, and I was physically there, but I wasn't as present for anyone but for the team.
Yeah, love that. So can we touch on how clients, because as we said, you were the be all and end all in terms of clients. So your team had client contact, of course, but you were the go-to for clients. And some of those clients had been around for a long time, and they were big, you know, pretty key clients. How did you communicate maternity leave to them and Belle coming on board?
So I think what we did was all of the key clients that I had I guess on all media mortar projects, there's two staff members on. One is called a project lead and one is a project support. So where I had been the project lead, the project support person stepped up to be the project lead, and I had moved to project support. On those. So we had sort of started internally, as an example, you know, one of the clients I had been the key contact, all of a sudden Christy started emailing more of the stuff, and I sort of slipped down as project support. So that had sort of started basically since I told the team I was pregnant. So I was already I wasn't the client comms on the things. And then in terms of handing them to Belle, we met with them, most of them physically. We have a lot of regional clients, so we had to do that by phone. And so it was really important that I did that when Belle was in place, so that they had a face to name situation, rather than, hey, I'm pregnant, someone's stepping in to do my work, don't know who it is yet. So I made sure that I did that with Belle. So that sort of started in that October day that when we did the client stuff and she got handed over. That said, we did have a couple of big, massive projects that were on the go that we didn't actually tell the clients that I was pregnant because the work was going to be delivered before I had the baby. So that remained make no difference. And then there was a couple of clients that we were pitching that we didn't, and whether this rightly or wrongly, we didn't mention that I was stepping out because it didn't really affect their delivery, but we thought the perception if I was gone might have affected how we would have won the work.
Yes, that makes sense.
So there was, I was sort of on a bit of a need to know basis, I guess.
So
and
good.
To the point that we had one client who I told at 38 weeks I was pregnant because they were very far away. And quite frankly, we hadn't had a meeting until that point. And I stood up in the meeting and they just like jaw hit the floor, couldn't believe it. And rightly or wrongly, they were told, quite late in the piece. But I think it was quite important to hand the team over, hand the clients over to the person who was going to be doing the work. But in most cases, they already knew, because there was this project support person who had been attending all the meetings. They just stepped up to be the lead Perfect. Comms on it.
And with the more senior clients, they had a good run at getting to know Belle. I mean, some of them had what, 5 months to get to know her as well, so it wasn't like
they
were like, hey, here she is and I'm gone tomorrow. I think that phased approach was really awesome as well. So then Penny arrived. So how late was she?
Well, she was only 5 days late, but am the most impatient person ever. And I was, I just had this like absolutely glorious pregnancy. I loved being pregnant until I reached 40 weeks, in which case like my ankles were the size of a house. It was February. I could no longer fit my Birkenstocks, and I'd sort of, everything that I loved doing, I couldn't do anymore because, you know, I love going to the gym, for a walk, and you know, my ankles were so inflated. And I remember it sort of got to a point, they were doing some road works on the street, that the, you know, bless the road workers, you know, I'd waddle out to the letterbox and they'd be like, oh, have you had the baby yet? I'm like, well, obviously
not. Most annoying question in the world.
And you know, and everyone, you know, and out of a place of love, you know, everyone's texting you saying, has the baby arrived?
Yes,
like, of course I'm going to tell you when it's come. So as it so happens, Penn was 5 days late. Arrived the 19th.
And is just divine.
Thank you. I love her. I absolutely, beyond words how much, I didn't know how much you could love something.
You know, remember I sent you this message early on when Penny was born, and I said, you're just so ready. You were so ready for it, you know, like I feel like you'd done what you wanted to do. You'd built, and it's often to say your life is over once you've had a baby, but you'd built your business. You've gotten to a point that you're really, really, and your business was your biggest, I mean, your biggest priority, maybe even sometimes over Chris, your partner, sometimes, maybe fine. Definitely over our partners at times. But, you know, I get it. You'd have been it'd be the center of your world. And I feel like you readying the business to the point that you did, but also I just think, almost like spiritually, you were just ready to be a mom. And it's just
so ready.
It's been so lovely to see you flourish so much in that role. I mean, even we were chatting on video before we started recording, and you're glowing, like you're so happy. And I just think you're such a wonderful success story for what the potential is from this transition. It's been really, really lovely to see. And Chris as well. I mean, my God, he has him wrapped so hard around her little finger.
Totally.
It's been gorgeous to watch you all.
We're so smitten with her. It's been I think it's sort of, important to know. I've never been that sort of person who, you know, loves children or,
you weren't that interested.
I wasn't really that interested. I'm certainly not interested in other people's kids still, you know, like I've never been that person who's like, can I hold the baby? You know,
yes.
I'm like, oh, cute outfit, you know, and, you know, happy to sort of, give them a little bit of a razz, but very quickly happy to hand them back to mum. So I wasn't quite sure how I'd go with that transition, but when it's your own, it's completely different. And people said that, but until you've done it.
So true. So how did maternity leave go? So what was the plan was for you? Cause you actually went back a bit earlier than expected, didn't you?
Did.
So the plan was to take what?
The plan was to transition back into the business from 1 June, was when was my official sort of date that I was going to come back. And I think in the end, I actually started coming back. I mean, I never, what I found is I started work pretty much when I got back home, because I found that I was very fortunate to have a baby who slept a lot.
Got back home from the hospital, just to be clear, you mean?
Yeah, back home from the hospital. Yeah. And the team was incredibly busy. So we actually, when I left, I had three staff. And when I came back, I had six. We grew exponentially. We had a lot of work that needed to be done. And I had a baby that was asleep a lot of the time. So I started back just doing, again, that bottom of the pyramid stuff, you know, a blog post here or there, things that could sit in isolation. If I didn't get to it, it was no drama. But if I did get to it, it was helping the team out a huge amount. So I just sort of was just getting assigned a couple little things in Asana each week that I was getting through, and I would just say to Belle, hey, I've got time to do more, or hey, I didn't get to this, I can do less. Yep. Absolutely no client-facing stuff. Yep. So then in terms of coming back physically to the office, I think I started back the middle of May was when I rejoined the team, but I sent around just some comms to the team just to say, just letting you know I'm back physically, but this is not to be told to any of the clients. Just because it's just on the down low. You can let them know if anyone asks that I'll be back in the new financial year. So I stayed sort of incognito in the business until the 1st of July, when I sent my emails around to the client to the clients to say I'm back.
Yeah, that's a nice way of doing it as well, because it just means you can settle in and there's no external expectations on you.
Exactly, and I think importantly, I was never going to go back to what I was doing. Yeah. So when I say I told the clients I was back, I told the clients I was working with now I was back.
Yeah,
the clients I had been working on that I was not going back to, they just saw the Facebook and Instagram update that said I'm back, and they just stayed with Belle or Rochelle or whoever their client comms manager was. It didn't come back to me.
Yeah, got it. So were there any dramas in the time that you were away? Like what worked in terms of staying in touch with the team that they felt like they still had you as a safety net if they needed anything? So what comm structures did you have while you were actually properly off?
Yeah, so we did, I did a triage system. So on what things needed to come to me.
Yeah.
And so essentially if there was a problem, every single thing had to go to Belle, including if, and Belle had asked this wasn't my request, including if it was Belle, because she works 4 days a week, including if it was on a Wednesday, you know, if someone was sick or had a client situation that had blown up, the first call was to Belle. And if they couldn't raise Belle, they had to text Belle. And if Belle didn't get back to them within, 2 hours, then they would call me.
Yeah.
I just
love how structured you are at this, because it just means, I mean, I think some people listening might be like, oh God, that's a bit, you know, how would you know what's going to happen? And, you know, that sounds a bit heavy handed almost, but it's this is the thing. It's that kind of structure means that everyone knows where they stand. There's no room for interpretation or confusion or assumptions. It's brilliant. Yeah,
you have to be super clear. And I had done structures on everything. You know, I'd even done down to, as an example, I did a culture doc, how much money we spend on birthday presents for the team, where you get it, we had an intern, what he got as his going away present, you know, all of everything was documented. So there was no questions asked on what the delivery was.
Yeah. And also I think for the team, I mean, it might sound silly that, you know, we at the Remarkables group, we did like a number balloon to celebrate, we called it their workiversary. But just things like that, I mean, they mean a lot to the team. Some people might think, oh, it's just a balloon, but it's that kind of stuff to maintain that kind of stuff when you're not there. It's minimum disruption for them and they still feel special. And that's really, really important that you did that, the culture piece.
Yeah, just so it was all maintained, and again, maintained fairly, particularly because we have, you know, the Melbourne team and they're remote. Yes. So then in terms of things that I did need to come back across, I had a team member resign while I was on maternity leave. So that was one that I did have to come back in and across on that one, and stepping into the recruitment of that. We recruited, Belle brought in three new team members, while I was on mat leave. So I did stay. It was incredible. And I stayed across that. So I got brought in, I attended, Belle did all the first round interviews, got the shortlist. And I came in for the final interview with each of those people to meet them. Just to give the all clear on that. And there was one client project that I came back across where I did client face. But what I had done is I'd written myself a contract for what things I would step back in for, because
I remember we worked on that list.
As we know, like as discussed, I like to touch a lot of things in the business. You know, like to be across things. And so I wrote a contract to myself that in maternity leave there would be only four things that I would come back for.
I've got that written in a notebook somewhere.
It was a client with strategic value. It was a passion project. So something that I felt like really like a wholehearted yes, totally aligned. Full body yes. One, it was like, I think it was, there was a capacity, absolute shortage of capacity, that there was physically no one else and it had been contracted one and there was just nowhere for it to go. That I would come back in into, and one, there was a financial dollar figure. So I think it was projects over, it had to be over 50 grand for me to come back.
Get out
to
of touch bed.
That. Yeah, exactly. I know. I feel like, so that's,
Because God knows you're just lolling around, you know, lolling around in bed when you've got a tiny baby. This is so helpful. I love that you're sharing this. And I love that you remember it so clearly as well. This is brilliant. So because you're back in the business the now.
I'm back in the business now, but those are the rules that I still live by, because I can get really
swept. That's so true. It's like a permanent rule. So true.
So now they're the things that, you know, well, why am I doing that Twitter deck? Or why am I resizing the images? This is a terrible use of time. No, it doesn't fit those four rules. That's where, sort of how it gets aligned or assigned to me.
So this might sound a bit of a weird question, because I know you've been touching the business over the last few months, but how was the business when you went back in? Like, how did it's almost like, you know, if you leave your house for Airbnb guests, like, how was it when you went back in?
You know what? It was better than I left it. Oh, it's in such a strong position. So,
what are you basing that on?
I'm basing that, well, if I base that financially, so, you know, just to be super honest and transparent, the team, they build more in the last. Not more, they build just shy of what we're building the entire financial year, the year before, in the last quarter. And that was the quarter I wasn't present for. So I think it was, 40 grand less than what we did in an entire financial year.
Wow.
I left as three people, came back as six. Systems were established and in place. The team lent on each other a lot. They upskilled in a lot of areas because I had perhaps been doing them, or the team can do a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
They had to learn. Everyone can quote now, not just me, because I had to leave instructions on how I came up with prices. The team are running more as an agency style model now, opposed to you know, I guess what a sort of a consultancy kind of system, because, you know, that was sort of how things were set up before. But, you know, Belle,
you were like the lead consultant.
Exactly. You know, Belle, since bringing things in, has structured things, you know, put people on longer retainers, all of that sort of thing, that gives us such a sense of freedom to be able to build and grow. And the biggest, I guess, thing that's really been quite eye-opening to me is that I had been a bit of a bottleneck within the business by holding on to too much. And by bringing in Belle, who's highly competent, paid to do a job, and is delivering it with such capability, the business has been able to grow. And it was terrifying to bring her in, or to spend that money on bringing in a senior person into the team. But that's just such a gear shift for us. It's, you know, and I know you talk about, you know, when you brought Sarah into the Remarkables group, how you had that like hockey stick.
It's the only way to describe it.
You talk about that, and you'd said that, and I of course I believed you, but like, until you see it with your own eyes. And it was terrifying to do, you know, and that, but to do it and to look back, it's the biggest gear shift we've ever had as a business. Well, is to have us another senior person in the team.
And it's, you know, it's permanent. This is it. It's not going backwards now. This is the new normal, which is just amazing. Any lessons that you would want to pass on? You've been so generous. Thank you for sharing this with everyone. Is there anything you wish you'd done better or differently, or you had known going into all of this? Any advice you give to someone else?
Advice is just not to be the part that you need to plan. I think people place the emphasis on when they're going to have the baby, you know, planning to get pregnant, that kind of thing. I think that the real planning happens once you fall pregnant, because you can't plan when you're going to, you know, nature has different ideas for us when you're going to do it. You know, I have a friend who's she hasn't even set up her business yet, but she talks to me frequently about, you know, what she's going to do is she's going to set up the business. Then they're going to try for a baby after 1 year. And then when she's pregnant, then she's going to sit out and do all of it. And it's like, it doesn't work like that. It just doesn't. It doesn't matter when you fall pregnant, so long as you're putting that plan in place.
Yeah. And it's enough time. That's the thing. I mean, 9 months
it's heaps of time.
Plenty of time. But I think, I think the timing you, I think us working back from the date that, working back from how you wanted to look as well, I think is really, really key.
And, you know, what I do differently is I would have hired a general manager years ago if I knew it was going to be
true,
so
isn't
profitable.
It? Yeah, yeah, you that's know? It. Why wait until the baby's on its way? Like,
oh,
my
God, I should have done this years ago.
Experience. Yeah.
Yeah,
so true.
Hire people who are good at their jobs and let them do it, you know. Stop
get out of
their
way.
Get out of the way. Sit down. Sit on your hands. Like, that's what, you know, you don't need to touch everything as the business owner. And that's been really, really apparent since going on mat leave.
Yeah, good on you. That's so good. And you're just incredible, my dear. I mean, I think this is almost – I'm calling this Mentee Case Files, but it's almost like a little snapshot for me of how far you have come in the years. It's just to be part of it all is incredible. So thank you. And absolutely love working with you. And I love that we get to talk about food and all the important things.
Well, I had a good coach, I've got to say. I didn't do it all.
Oh, you sweetheart. Well, I think this is the great thing. I'd been there relatively, it was only a few years beforehand, so it was all pretty fresh that we could step through. But I think, I mean, even if someone doesn't have an agency model, they've got a very, very different business to what you have. I mean, so much of what we went through would apply to any business, and whether or not it's to get ready for a baby or whether it's just to get a GM on board and start to buy back some more time and that get, as you said, get out of your business's way, like start to let it grow. I think so much of what you shared would apply to them too. So before we wrap up, what if someone's listening to this going, whoa, this chick sounds super smart and the business sounds awesome, what kind of clients do you work with?
Well, we now work with everyone.
What, you don't specialize in tourism, Hannah? Really?
No, we're now a content marketing agency for everyone. So we work with a number of different industries. So we still, do a lot of tourism, but we've got clients in finance, construction, beauty, produce, all sorts of different industries in terms of content marketing. So lots of the work that we do is social media work. That's where most of our work lies, but website copy, blog posts, EDMs, we're responsible for writing and distributing all of those. And we've got a number of sort of different packages. And we also do marketing mentoring, which is a great way if you're perhaps just at the start of your business journey and what you want is, you know that you need to do marketing, but you're not quite sure where to start. We run a program called Quarterly Marketing Mentoring, where we sit with you, help establish what your strategy is, and then the steps to be able to achieve that. So that's a great program that we do as well, which sort of helps define what you need to be putting in place.
Yeah. So the monthly retainers are more for maybe more established businesses.
Exactly.
And then the marketing mentoring is for people who aren't quite ready for that step, but do want to tap into you and your team's amazing brains to see where they should start.
Exactly, to be able to do it themselves or do a bit of training, or they just want to soundboard and go, is this the right thing? What do you reckon? Is, you know, am I wasting my time with this? I'm not getting the results. And we can sort of tweak what they're doing or suggest a better plan of attack. So we're on Instagram, Facebook, website as Media Mortar. And
I'll pop all your links into the show notes as well so people can find you. Amazing. Yes. And just quickly on your speaking, what kind of speaking are you doing? I'm actually out of the loop on your speaking over the last few months.
Oh, well, we've been doing lots of webinars at the moment, really since COVID. So doing lots of working with small businesses via, I guess, their membership organizations, doing, you know, things like five free marketing practices you can put into your business today that will return a sale tomorrow, that kind of those sorts of topics. How to set up a blog for your business,
common content marketing pitfalls we see and how to avoid them. So those kinds of topics. Lots of webinars in that space. We're down to speak at a number of in real life conferences towards the end of this year that unfortunately have all been cancelled. But
yeah. Cancelled or pushed back? What's happened?
Well, pushed back, I should say. Some are going to run digitally. And then the other thing that we're doing is, you know, speaking of the diversification piece, it's like, okay, well, we're not doing conferences IRL this year, but what we can do is speak on podcasts like this. You know, this is still an incredible speaking opportunity. So looking at those.
And arguably you reach more people.
100%, 100%. Yeah. So that's just looking at those kinds of things that we can still do.
Amazing. Oh, my dear. Thank you so much. Anything, I feel like we've covered a lot of ground and I think we're talking just over an hour. Is there anything else you feel like you'd like to add before we go?
Not really. But if you are in a position where you're wanting to have a baby or you are pregnant and you're worried about what's going to happen to your business, is don't panic. Put a plan in place and just start chipping away at it, because it was scary at the start. You'd be lying to say it wasn't. But once you start putting a plan in place, it's actually a lot more manageable than it may seem. And to work with someone, you know, like Lorraine or a business coach or whoever, or, you know, your partner, and just really talk to them to soundboard off what that plan is, really, because that was the real gear shift for me was, you know, I felt quite overwhelmed with how I was going to do it. And once we broke down, you know, Bell's role into, well, firstly, what is it? How are we going to afford it? And then how am I going to hire it? Once I'd answered those three questions, the rest was just a process. I just had to put it into place.
So true. Just a process. It's so true. And can we just finish on what you shared? I love what you said. Before we started recording, you said that now that you're on the other side and you've got your beautiful 6-month-old baby and you've got the nanny sorted and you're, I just said to you, it's like, you're doing it, Hannah. Like, this is it. You're doing it. The working mom, you're doing it. And you were just saying that there's no position you think that would give you the flexibility than having your own business has given you. And you've just really, do you want to just speak to that for a sec? Because I think it's inspiring for other women who are thinking about
I was saying to Lorraine, the thing that I've learned the most about having a business is it's the flexibility that you've got to be a working mom that you don't get as an employee. You know, I've got friends in my mother's group who are negotiating and navigating their return to work. And so they have to really choose, do they go back at 6 months or 12 months? And are they going to go back at 3 days a week or 5 days a week? You know, before I had Penny, I waxed lyrical about how I was going to go back at 3 days a week and they'd be full days and I'd be in the office. And as soon as she was born, I was like, this isn't sustainable. This isn't what I want to do. So instead I go to work 5 days a week, but for less hours, and I only go in the afternoons. And that's really achievable for me and Penny, because, you know, as an example, you know, I thought, oh, it'd be simple. Penny will take a bottle. Off she goes with the nanny. Penny doesn't take a bottle. Yep. So I'm, you know, on a 4-hourly feeding schedule, you know, and, you know, she just started solid. So I'm, you know, now a short order cook to a baby who likes warm food. So here we are. And it's that freedom and flexibility that you get if you're your own boss, to be able to do that, you know, and that's what you need more than anything I've discovered since having a baby is the flexibility to work, you know, when the baby is asleep. And in those early days, they do sleep a lot and you can get a lot done.
If you have a sleeping baby, sorry, because I know we're going to have some women listen to this going, fuck you both, my baby doesn't sleep.
100%. I should say.
If you have a sleeping baby.
And the other thing I didn't even touch on with this that I do think is worth mentioning, and one thing that I'm really quite passionate about changing the narrative about, is baby brain. I heard so much about it beforehand. And as I said, you know, and again, everyone is different, but I had only ever heard of people who were pregnant, who were sick all the time, and tired, lethargic, all of those things, felt foggy. And that wasn't my experience at all. Mm-hmm. And yes, I might be an anomaly, but I know you felt the same too, Lorraine. You were very energetic, you know, as always.
Less so with Wilder in the first trimester. Like, I was definitely tired, but definitely had two brilliant pregnancies, I would say, relatively speaking.
Yeah. And that's something I just, you know, I just felt like when I was telling people I was pregnant, people had perhaps thought that I was, about to check out with baby brain and come back a dithering mess. And I've never felt more sharp as I have since having Penn. So I think
I love that
I really want to be a bit of a champion
for that, because I don't think that has to be the same. It might not be that way for you, but it's certainly not how everyone feels.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of the reason women feel the way they do about, you know, maternity leave or coming back is that, you know, they feel like they've had a lobotomy. They had a baby. It's, you know, it's completely different, you know.
Yeah.
You don't leave your baby.
Yeah. You know, when I really love that you've said that, because same, I didn't experience baby brain at all. I mean, I'm still wild. It's 2 months today. I don't feel like I've got it, you know, I've experienced it. And I think in a weird way, it's like the social narrative is like, oh, a woman's pregnant or she's just had a baby. She's got baby brain. And then it's almost that you feel like there's an expectation of that. And it's almost a way of dismissing women, if that makes sense, when they're pregnant, particularly as a business owner. I mean, your brain is your business. I mean, you need to be switched on. So I do think that, yeah, I love that you said that. And as you correctly pointed out, everyone is going to be different, but I think it's unfair, incredibly unfair, to place that expectation on a woman because she's pregnant or she's just had a baby that, yeah, like you said, she's left her brain at home. And yeah, it doesn't really serve. It's not a very empowering story for anyone involved.
No, exactly. And I think the narratives about pregnancy and working women starts from the second you fall pregnant. So it's about,
it's true.
Not just when you come back. So I think, yeah, I just want to be, for my team, especially a real sort of champion of change in that respect as well.
Yeah. Oh, look at you. Love. Thank you so much, my dear. Thank you so much for sharing. And I hope I'll get penny cuddles at some point
when you're
I've only got them now. Once. I got, well, yeah, that was in May. She was 10 weeks old when I saw her, when I finally met her. Mm. So yeah, hopefully she won't be 10 years old, but I can fly up and see you.
Get out of this. Absolutely.
Oh God. Okay. Well, much love, my dear. I'll let you get back to, Penny, and I think I know you're heading into the office this afternoon. You're walking your talk. You're with her this morning and heading into the office. And my 2-month-old is coming back from his walk soon for a feed as well. So thank you so much. That was just exceptional. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me this week for my chat with Hannah Statham. You can find Media Mortar at mediamortar.com.au. That's MORTAR. Or on Instagram at Media Mortar. And Hannah is at Hannah Statham, and I'll pop all the links in my show notes. To inquire about mentoring with me, go to my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au, and head to the Work With Me page on there. And I'll also put a link to my mentoring page in the show notes as well. So until next episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show, I'll chat to you then.
Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is at Lorraine Remarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.